How does one reconcile the apparent lack of control that is experienced in meditation, if one is paying close attention, with the apparent need to control one's circumstances off the cushion? Is it possible to live with complete non-contention and still have an organized life? Well, I think one of the things is recognizing because especially that aspect of control or need to control, and because I think there's assumptions that we make that if we were kind of completely spontaneous and in complete accord with all circumstances, that it would all be very spontaneous and one wouldn't need no need to control, or there would be no control. Everything would unfold naturally. And that's whether internally or externally. But the reality is that, there's always a balance that we need to be paying attention to, in the sense that, like in meditation, there are certain areas that we can control, and then there are certain areas where we need to relinquish control and let things fall into place, so that we can have a certain control over our posture. We can have a certain control over our directing of attention. But there's a lack of control over how peaceful one will be, how quickly one would become peaceful. That's one has a lack of control. And so there's areas where we can affect change, and then there's other areas where we have to just really let go and let it unfold as it will. And actually, the same thing in, say, off the cushion in ordinary life. We do need to make very skillful choices as to where we can exercise some kind of control, have some kind of organization and structure to our life, and then how the results unfold, we have to keep monitoring that. We have to keep watching that, and to see what happens. Now, one of the aspects of think of control, and think of the example of the Buddha. He fully enlightened being, and and encouraged other people to practice to liberate themselves as well, be fully enlightened, but he gave very particular instructions on how to how in terms of conduct in body, speech, and mind. And then when it comes to the actual, say, particularly for monastics, then the kind of structures for conduct. I mean, there's real organization there. Or the example of when the Buddha was first enlightened and he spent the rains in Benares, or outside of Benares, at Sarnath, at the deer park, and during the rainy season stayed, and then from those first five disciples, then various people from the surrounding area started to come and receive teachings, and then by the end of that rains retreat, after the rains were over then and the weather cleared, there were 60 arhats, 60 enlightened beings. And then the Buddha said, after the rain subsided, said, okay, everybody, go off in separate directions. You know what needs to be, and go for the, go and teach and encourage others, for the benefit and welfare of everybody. And when he said, I'm going back to Gayasisa, which was very close to where he was enlightened at, and Bodh Gaya. And it was a very clear intention, thought through. He went and taught a group of fire worshippers, religious seekers of practitioners of another persuasion, or philosophical persuasion, and in order to lay a foundation for his own teaching. And he had a plan. And after teaching those, that, because he was there were three brothers who had a large following. And they were the most respected religious practitioners in the samanas. The Brahmins were their own kind of caste and religious basis. So the samanas, the kind of meditators and practitioners, they were the most respected samanas in the area, in Magadha. Magadha was the most important region in India at the time. The Buddha knew what he was doing and taught those. They became his students. Then he went with that group and went and visited King Bimbisara, who was the king of Magadha. You know, within a year, the Buddha had pretty much had India sewn up. So that was really organized. He was really thinking through, okay, what's going to be beneficial? How do I use my time skillfully? How do I use my... how do I do this? So that, I think, there is this... One has to recognize that whatever actions we do, they do have a result. And to be willing to pay attention, because there's somehow in our conception of spiritual practice, that there's a, it's all kind of works magically. And no, it works according to causes and conditions. And whether it's an internal or whether it's external, that's the nature of the world we inhabit. So that using our wisdom and discernment to see, okay, how to apply oneself skillfully to the causes and conditions that will be for my own benefit and for the benefit of others. Yeah. And that's a, it's actually pretty simple. But we have to be clear and also recognize that, you know, things don't always work the way we conceive of it. And that's where we need to let go, where we have to, that we have to give in to, well, this is the way it is. So that that developing of a balance of control and relinquishing control, you have to pay attention to what actually is, because there are some areas where you really have to take responsibility and not. Taking responsibility is kind of foolish. And so that, but then, yeah, sort of taking responsibility to the point of being a control freak, that's suffering for oneself and for others. So it's always a balance. But the point of investigation is okay, where is the suffering? Where is the end of suffering? So right now for me, the end of suffering is a bathroom break. So have a break, come back for puja.